Welcome to An Examined Education, a podcast from the Cambridge School, a classical Christian school in San Diego, California, where we examine an education that prepares students to think well, love rightly, and live wisely. This episode starts our second season, and we're going to kick things off with a short series called Behind the Scenes at Cambridge. Stay tuned to get a glimpse backstage of the Cambridge approach to classical Christian education. On today's episode, we have the pleasure of talking with the founder and head of school, Gene Kim, who shares with us how the Cambridge School leadership team was put together over the years and the current impact the leadership team has on Cambridge today. Keep an eye out for a bonus episode from Gene's talk on building a high-performing leadership team from the 2020 Society of Classical Learning Conference. Here we go. Hi, Gene. It's great to see you and be with you here today as we start our Behind the Scenes series. This is the second season of An Examined Education, and I'm really looking forward to talking with you today about the leadership team here at the Cambridge School. It's a little weird because I'm part of it, but we'll just overlook that right now. So you're the founder and the head of school here. And so you've been here from the beginning, digging in the trenches, getting it all up and running. So what was it like before you had a leadership team around you?
Yeah, what a great question. I'm so happy I have a leadership team now, because the remembering what those early years were like is not something I do often. They were really hard years, but we just didn't have the resources really to have a team at that point. All of our efforts were volunteer, including mine. Mm. And so it was just trying to do what we could to get the school up and running. So I just remember being the one woman administrative show. It was like, I would answer the phones. I would open the school. I would like set up the lunch tables. I would clean up the lunch tables. I'd clean up the accidents that happened, with little kids. I'd then be running around sweeping and then people would come and I'd be the admissions person, and then the teacher was out sick. And so I'd go sub in a classroom and, I'm trying to put on an auction and figure out how to raise money fundraise and market and build out the curriculum at the same time was a school that was starting from scratch. So kind of being the academic dean over that, I feel like I had, 15 different jobs, in those early years. So that was really, really challenging. And it makes me so very grateful for the people that I have around me today, because I still remember the pain of starting a school like that.
Well, there may be some schools out there that are just like that, right? Upstart schools or schools that are in their first few years. When did you know that you needed a leadership team, and how did you find your way to a leadership team?
Yeah, I think I knew pretty early on that this was too big a task for one person. So a lot of it was, involving parents as volunteers and all that in those early days, and board members and things like that. And eventually hiring like little part-time people to, be receptionists and front office and, help with things, various things and tasks. But around year five or six, as we were growing, God has just been blessing the school and growing the school. I just realized this was getting to be way too much. And we're like, we need to hire some people. We had really very carefully built all of the grammar school through sixth grade. And at that point, I thought we were looking ahead at building the most difficult part of our build out. It was seventh through 12th grade. Mm-hmm. And I needed to give that attention. So at that point, we thought we really do need to have a grammar school principal in place to manage what had already been built and give me a little space and latitude to focus on the upper school. And of course, one of the most important hires that I made really early on was a business manager, because I just mm-hmm. thought, even though I can do QuickBooks and I did all the books for a while, it was always at midnight with all my kids asleep. And it was just the worst experience ever. And I don't like QuickBooks. I can do academic stuff all day. I love the philosophy, I love vision casting, but QuickBooks was just not my favorite. So I was so happy to turn over the reins to our business manager, who's so competent and capable of taking care of all of those things. And around that time, I really realized, oh, wow, we need to I need help with fundraising. Like, I had been doing it and managing it, but it was just too much. There are just too many details to manage all the time. And that's when you came on board.
Yes,
in
2012. Very happily.
Yep. And so that's how we kept growing the team. And eventually it was like, there's so much, and just 5 or 6 years ago, I thought, well, we need an upper school principal now, now that we're like getting very, getting through all the upper school grades and the build out again, too many details to manage, et cetera. And so I would help build and then get out of the weeds and help build and then get out of the weeds. And it was really a tandem process, you know, for a long time. I think I really wanted to make sure that the handoff to each of the people on the leadership team was a really intentional one. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times I would spend the first year or two kind of riding tandem with them, and then we'd talk a lot, like we did with you, and you'd get kind of get in my brain and get into like how we thought about it so that we could stay mission true. It was very, very intentional. And from the way we wrote and spoke or did things or processes and procedures. And then eventually it's like, okay, you're all ready to ride hands free, you know, and to bike on your own. And those transitions then were very good as I let go of certain areas of responsibility and details. It was always a smooth transition because it was very intentional.
Those different positions are there, the upper school principal, grammar school principal. We have an assistant head of school and a director of advancement and operations in there, the business manager. What kind of characteristics were you looking for each of those people? We have the positions, but what kind of character traits were you looking for?
Yeah, I think every leader kind of casts a long shadow on the organization that they lead. And as a founder, you cast kind of a longer shadow. So a lot of, you know, the organization probably reflects strengths and weaknesses that I have. And I just wanted to staff around that. So I just knew I don't need people who are just like me. I need people with very different skill sets. And like you, you just love your spreadsheets and you love the spreadsheets and you're super extroverted. We make a great development team when we go out, you know, casting vision and, you know, and finding resources to help fund this vision and fuel it. And then, you know, I in a business manager, you need someone who's super, super detail oriented and loves making sure that all the numbers match down to the pennies and all of that. And I have that in our business manager. That's wonderful. And so all of the different, like, you know, I have our assistant head of school is really gifted in conflict management and, you know, just dealing with difficult conversations and things. And so that was an area of strength that he brought to this whole thing. Our upper school principal and grammar school principals are both very detail oriented, but very relational as well. And so we're grateful. I'm just grateful for the different strengths on our team and how we all complement each other on the team. I'm glad that no one is a clone of anybody because really, but the main things that they all have in common is that they have a deep and abiding love for the school and the mission of the school. And I feel like they've drunk deeply of that mission and vision. We call it drinking the Kool-Aid, which is probably not the best way to talk about it, but I feel like they do. They love this school, love the mission and how it's articulated here, and they want to make mission true decisions. So I think their love of God, love of people, love of the Cambridge School specifically and our mission, and their desire to always make things better and grow, that's kind of the stuff they all have in common. And then they have different gifts that really are seen in the work that they do.
Hey, this has been great so far. We're going to take a quick break to hear from our resident classicist here at the Cambridge School, Jim Hamilton.
Welcome to the arena. I'm Jim Hamilton, the chair of classical languages at the Cambridge School. And today we're going to be talking about leadership through an anecdote of the classical world. One of my favorite characters of antiquity was known as Agesilaus the Great, considered by many to be the last good king of Sparta. And in an amazing story, during a civil war that was occurring in Egypt, one of the claimants to the throne had asked Agesilaus to consult and potentially ally or at least train his troops in Spartan ways. So he showed up on the coast of North Africa to meet with the king. In typical Spartan fashion, Agesilaus took to the old ways. He led his men by example. Along with his men, he slept on the beach. No tent, no coverings, just laid out some few simple skins on the ground. The next morning, when Egyptian emissaries arrived, Agesilaus, who at this time was 80, greeted them and told them that he was the king, to which they did not believe. In fact, they were flabbergasted upon his insistence that he was, in fact, the king, because he looked a little disheveled and didn't have any sort of markings or wasn't staying in any sort of grand tent that would designate him as a king, at least as they would think a king would be. They came with gifts, cartloads of gold, bolts of expensive cloth, and fancy foods, which Agesilaus turned away, except for some of the foods, and the nicer of which he gave to their slaves, while the Spartans only stuck to the simple meats that were given. So obviously the Egyptians even got to the point of thinking that he might have been foolish or crazy or something because he did not behave in a typical manner of the leaders that they had seen. In a very similar fashion, if you don't know the history of our school, our own founder, Gene Kim, in the early days when we were merely renting space from a church, it was required that the teachers would have to break down desks and move things out of the way, take pictures off of the wall so that the church could function normally on Sunday. And then every Monday, that would be back to setting that up again. So as people came to tour the school to see what Cambridge was all about, they would oftentimes find Gene doing menial labor, sweeping floors, moving desks, any kind of support role that you would find someone doing, Gene was there. And that is the kind of leader that a Spartan king would have been. Someone who leads by example, who leads with a servant's heart, not someone who expects red carpets to be rolled out for them, but someone who believes in the mission of the school to the point that they are willing to do whatever it takes to get things rolling. This has been The Arena. I'm Jim Hamilton. Until next time.
What are some of the implications that either you've seen happen or that you could see happen having that high performing leadership team around you?
Oh, the impact has just been huge. I would say, you know, in any organization, culture is everything.
Right.
And culture is fragile and always needs to be tended to. But when you have a high performing leadership team, a high performance team, where they get the mission and vision, they love it and they really own the culture of the school as well, and they see the importance of it, you have DNA replication going on everywhere. So while I can no longer be in every nook and cranny of the school and be in every decision of the school, I feel like I have amazing deputies, you know, who really know my heart and vision and understand it and love it and want to make decisions that are mission true and aligned with everything that we have thus, you know, built thus far. And so that's really what's enabled us to move from strength to strength. And I think kind of put us on an accelerated track to building health in our school. I mean, it really began with, you know, spending a lot of time investing in that leadership team and then having them invest in their teams that they lead. And so somehow, like, from that, you get a board that is mission aligned, you have a head that's mission aligned, you get a leadership team that's mission aligned, and that prevents a lot of mission drift in the school, all throughout school and organization.
I've heard mission drift, that term. Can you explain a little bit about what that that is?
Yeah, it's just one of those unfortunate realities of lots of organizations is that you start with this mission, everyone's on fire for it, they love it, and then over time, as people change and there's turnover and, you know, people grow weary or whatever it might be, or systems are not in place, you know, you slowly lose that focus on what, you know, your reason for existence and why you started that organization to begin with. And so we are very proactive about preventing mission drift in the way that we onboard, hire people and onboard people, how we continue to train people, how we continue to put the vision in front of them as to what we're doing. And that really helps us remain mission true, because a lot of organizations, unfortunately, you know, over the course of 100 or 200 years, will kind of like lose their way and lose their institutional memory. And that's what we're trying really, really hard not to do.
So what are some of the things that you've implemented with the leadership team that help them stay mission true? You talked a little bit about you know, kind of transferring what your heart and your knowledge of the school by walking alongside them for a little bit. Now that those reins are off, how do you keep the leadership team staying true to the mission?
Sure. So we're just intentional about our time together. Like, one, we really enjoy each other as people.
That's
first.
True.
We enjoy each other as coworkers. And what we've built is just a high level of trust between each other, where we can really come with our challenges and hardships and problem solving and our best problem solving. And, you know, I never feel like the best answers have to come from me or best solutions. It's like, okay, let's just get to the best solution as fast as we can. Let's put our heads together and do that. So high levels of trust, you know, and a lot of relational equity into each other, and just lots of time spent. And so we have a series of meetings, you know, per week, and we let those meetings linger. It's the place where we laugh and cry and pray and,
right,
you know, brainstorm and problem solve and do all of that. So it's time spent like that. We do, you know, one-on-one meetings. I do have one-on-one meetings with all of my direct reports. And then we have a quarterly offsite. And I think that's really very, very helpful for this particular team. We just get off, spend the whole day together thinking through where are we headed, the strategic goals and visions, and what steps do we need to take in order to move the whole mission forward. And those are really valuable times, both relationally and strategically for the school. And then we just invest in a lot of professional development, you know, mm-hmm, for the leadership team. We send them to things to keep learning. We read things together. We discuss things together. We spend time caring for each other and then, mm-hmm, celebrating things together.
That's
and
great.
Like mourning over things
right
together. I think those kind of relational details and care, those things matter a lot in building a really cohesive team. And I think that's what we have. And that spills
right
out on the rest of the school.
So one of our internal faculty and staff values is a make it better culture. How do we make things better that we do? And so with the leadership team, what are different ways that you could see that we could make it better moving forward?
Yeah, that's a good question. I always think of, I mean, that whole phrase I borrowed from Andy Stanley, and he talks about, like, you know, that idea of making it better and what can you do individually to make us better institutionally. And I think it's just something that kind of it's part of the warp and woof of how our leadership team operates, is we're never resting on our laurels, no matter how many accolades, no matter how, you know, wonderful things may seem. We always see that things could be better, and we can't tackle everything at once, of course, but we try to, you know, identify and prioritize what needs to be tackled next. What can we improve? How can we make this better? And every single year we do. And that's a lot of what, mm-hmm, we do during our quarterly meetings. That's why we have, you know, outside input, you know, on our different areas of operation and spheres of influence. And then we discuss what can we do about that. And so it's a lot of just getting input from outside, talking to each other and not being insular, but looking outward as much as we can to glean new information and say, okay, can't do all of those things at once, but what can we prioritize? What do we want to do next in terms of strategic improvements across the school? And it seems to happen, like, in every
You're
area,
right,
whether it's academic or logistical or schedules or, you know, how we do benefits or, you know, whatever it is, mm-hmm, we're always trying to make improvements, however small they might be. And so that they might move us towards really big changes over time.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jean, thank you so much for joining us today, talking about your leadership team. Very happy to be a part of that team. It's wonderful. And please stay tuned to another episode where Jean Kim will talk about building a high-performance leadership team from her talk at the SCL, the Society of Classical Learning Conference that she spoke at this summer. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to An Examined Education. Be sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. And if you like what you hear, be sure to check out our website, schedule a private tour, or reach out to the Advancement Office. We'd love to see you. And we'd love to hear what you have to say about the podcast. So be sure to check us out on your favorite social media platform. Again, that's at An Examined Education. Leave us a comment, rate and review. And until next time, think well, love rightly, and live wisely.